Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record, program number 1011, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This is being recorded on June 19th of the year 2018, Juneteenth. As the title of the program indicates, we're going to be updating a number of paths of inquiry we have looked at before, and also we are going to be introducing a few new things. Much of what we're going to be talking about deals with not only the dissemination of ultra-right-wing and fascist philosophy online, but in particular the trafficking of Nazi and fascist views, but mixed in with other things. In some cases, extreme culture, and in other cases, overlapping with and mixed in with misogynistic culture, anti-female culture and ideas. We're also going to be updating aspects of the hashtag MeToo movement. I am more than a little suspicious of that. I suspect that is an op. Certainly do not hold a brief for sexual harassment, oppression, rape, what have you. But the way that this has been playing out has been to destroy some key opponents of Donald Trump and the far right, and to do so without any really substantive proof, something that would stand up in court. Hearsay evidence is something that is not admissible in a court of law, and I think along with the valuable stance on and awareness of the need for avoiding sexual oppression, persecution, what have you, things like the deep-sixing of John Conyers, a congressional opponent of the Azov Battalion, and the removal of Al Franken, a seated U.S. senator from Minnesota, behind an altogether flimsy and, frankly, suspicious gambit involving the right-wing political commentator Leanne Creedon and people like Roger Stone. We're going to visit the career of Ronan Farrow, an up-and-coming media star and darling of the progressive political sector, whose CV is strongly suggestive of involvement with the intelligence community. It was Ronan Farrow who crystallized the takedown of Harvey Weinstein, someone who I suspect was long the focal point of opposition research by the GOP and the far right, something he left himself apparently wide open to. I would also note that Ronan Farrow co-authored the article, also in the New Yorker, that took down former New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, who was a serious opponent not only of Donald Trump, but who also was investigating the, and I'm not sure how it is pronounced, the NXIVM cult. That is a cult that involved a number of very wealthy and relatively influential women, and that appears to have entrapped them or incorporated them into what might very well be described as a fascist mind control cult. The women themselves appear to be victims in many ways. The cult itself has more connections than a switchboard. People as various as the Dalai Lama, and above all, longtime GOP and Donald Trump political trickster Roger Stone is deeply implicated in the, or is involved, has been involved with some of the training programs of the NXIVM cult. That was being investigated by Eric Schneiderman, but will not be investigated anymore. One of the things that we're going to be highlighting, at least I want to call to people's attention, is the extent to which people who are not wrapped too tight or who are suffering in one way or another are vulnerable to manipulation, either by something like the hashtag MeToo movement or by a truly insidious gathering, grouping on the exact opposite side of the spectrum, the incels movement, a virulent, misogynistic online movement that overlaps the Nazi, fascist, white supremacist / alt-right community as well. I want to remind people that people's feelings about sexuality are among the deepest and most pained and conflicted feelings people have, an awful lot of people anyway. And those feelings are open to manipulation, and the cynical manipulation of those feelings can produce some truly horrible things. I think that with, on the one hand, the incels, and that, by the way, it's a contraction for involuntary celibate, I-N-C-E-L, and the hashtag MeToo movement, I think we are poised for a truly hellacious brew of people who are going to be catapulted into the political fray by largely unconscious and psychological factors that leave them open to manipulation. Online culture in particular, I think, leaves people who are suffering or who are naive or immature or just not wrapped too tight to begin with. It leaves them vulnerable to manipulation. One of the things we have been seeing a lot of is an uptick in the already epidemic manifestation of mass shootings in, for the record, 1002 and 1003. I spoke about the Nazi and fascist influences on many of the school shootings, not only the Stockton Schoolyard Massacre of Patrick Edward Purdy back in the late 80s, but the Lakeland High School shooting in Florida by Nicholas Cruz, and others of these school shooters appear to have been influenced by Nazi and fascist propaganda, much of it online. I noted in, for the record, 1003, that there were some 173 different forums online overlapping both the alt-right and the gaming communities that celebrate school shootings. Also, the alt-right has been actively recruiting depressed people to their cause. The discussion about the mass shootings has invariably focused on gun control and the access to firearms, and the fact that an awful lot of these shooters are actually involved with one manner or another of extreme right political philosophy has gone unnoticed. The Guardian of May 19th of 2018 has an article about Stephen Paddock. He was the fellow who rented a room in Las Vegas and blazed away at a bunch of people who were at a country and western concert. There appears to have been much more to that than we have been told. Paddock had developed an algorithm for gaming online poker playing, and winning this would have made him very useful to an organization because he could have generated a great deal of money for that organization using his algorithm to manipulate online poker. Paddock, I would note, had made some 200 trips out of Las Vegas to gamble, which is interesting in and of itself. Most people travel to Las Vegas to gamble. He traveled away from Las Vegas. At the country and western concert shortly before, Paddock began shooting. A woman near the front of the audience stood up and began shouting to the other people in the audience that they were all about to die. She then attempted to walk that back, but that was never really satisfactorily dealt with. And Paddock, there are many other things about that that warrant more scrutiny than they have received. He apparently opened fire at some of the hotel employees shortly before opening fire on the audience at the C&W concert. Man, you go to a Las Vegas casino or hotel and start shooting at the staff, you're going to draw quite a response very quickly. And I think the situation of Stephen Paddock needs to be much more thoroughly researched than it is likely to be. What is apparently something on the public record is that, like so many of these mass shooters, Stephen Paddock was an ideological right-winger. Specifically, he was what is called a sovereign citizen. This is an offshoot of the militia movement. And it is, again, part of an organized right-wing philosophy. Again, this article from The Guardian of May 19th of 2018 by Jason Wilson. New documents suggest Las Vegas shooter was conspiracy theorist, what we know. And the article goes on. Tantalizingly, people who encountered Paddock before his shooting said that he expressed conspiratorial anti-government beliefs, which are characteristic of the far right. I have a large excerpt of the article in the description for the show. One of the things that is interesting, aside from the fact that he was a sovereign citizen and was expressing views that are similar to those of the militia movement and the Posse Comitatus, which is a branch of the Aryan Nations, all of this is lumped under the rubric of conspiracy theorist, that all-encompassing moniker which enables anyone, be it someone from the mainstream media or the government, to dismiss facts and individuals. Certainly some of the things that Paddock appears to have expressed are beyond the pale. A woman claims that Paddock and his companions were saying that courtroom flags with golden fringes are not real flags. The belief that gold fringed flags are those of a foreign jurisdiction or, quote, admiralty flags, unquote, is characteristic of so-called sovereign citizens, unquote, who believe, among other things, that the current U.S. government and its laws are illegitimate. There is also a casual brush off of the notion embraced by Stephen Paddock that there were assembly camps, concentration camps, if you will, not extermination camps a la Auschwitz, but Konzentrationslager, or concentration camps that were being run by FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. And this is all lumped together by the author of this article as part of the wacko, implausible ideas that Stephen Paddock had. Now, again, he appears to have been influenced by far-right conspiratorial theory. However, the fact of the matter is that during the Iran-Contra scandal, it emerged that FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, had in fact been tabbed by Oliver North and company to implement the roundup and incarceration potentially of millions of Americans in the case of any one of a number of things, a massive civil disorder, protesting a U.S. invasion abroad, or any one of a number of other circumstances could have brought about the suspension of the Constitution and a declaration of martial law. One of the things that I find interesting and one of the things I spoke about in For the Record 1003 is that part of the contingency plan involved the federal deputization of paramilitary right-wingers, many of the same types of people that Paddock appears to have been influenced by, and who knows, perhaps was associating with and helping to finance by his online poker playing algorithm, it is a matter of public record that those plans were actually developed. There was an article on the front page of the Miami Herald by prize-winning journalist Alfonso, A-L-F-O-N-S-O, Charby, C-H-A-R-B-Y, talking about these very things. We spoke about them in AFA program number 32 that we recorded in 1987, and yet all of this is handled by Jason Wilson and the Guardian. The first version of the FEMA camp conspiracy theory was in the newsletters of the far-right Posse Comitatus movement in the early 1980s, actually. It appeared on the front page, or in an article that was featured on the front page of the Miami Herald by a prize-winning journalist. I think the ignorant and casual dismissal of some of those things permits then the mixing of that documented fact with a lot of the wacko stuff that Stephen Paddock and others of his ilk are prone to do. For example, again from the Guardian article, militia movement entrepreneur like John Chalkman of the Militia of Montana elaborated the FEMA camp story and newsletters in his infamous Blue Book, which was filled with pictures allegedly showing camps, trains loaded with Russian tanks, and the arrival of black helicopters, unquote. The notion that Russian troops, tanks, or whatever are going to be used to declare martial law or implement martial law in the U.S. under the auspices of the UN or whatever are frankly ridiculous. However, it is a matter of public record that those contingency plans were drawn up by Oliver North and Company and were going to be implemented under FEMA. And ironically, it would be people like potentially Stephen Trockman or John Trockman or Stephen Paddock who might be deputized in the event of the implementation of those plan. So take away from this story, and there are long excerpts in the description for the program that will become available shortly, that again, Paddock appears to have been influenced by sovereign citizen slash posse comitatus slash far right political ideology, and that may very well have played a role in his doing what he decided to do. Also, though, note that the mainstream media continue to turn up their nose at documented information that makes the twisting of the FEMA camps into a part of a far-right slash fascist ideological constellation.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
Again, from the Guardian article of May 19th, Posse Comitatus, especially active in Western states from the late 1960s, believed that the U.S. was controlled by a Jewish conspiracy, which it referred to as ZOG, Zionist Occupation Government. It also promoted Christian identity theology, which held that the white race was the lost tribe of Israel and that Jews were in league with Satan. At some point, they thought America's imposter government would round up and imprison white men. Apart from developing anti-government beliefs, Posse Comitatus' crank legal theories laid the groundwork for a still flourishing sovereign citizen movement. Gavin Long, I believe his name was, the black former Marine, who shot up some people in Baton Rouge, Louisiana during 2016, was a black sovereign citizen. The fellow who went off in Dallas shortly before that had been influenced by the New Black Panthers and the Nation of Islam, both of which are black fascist organizations. And again, this is one of the things that has not received notice. How many of these mass shootings are being done by people who have been influenced by far-right ideology or are actually members of some far-right group. From the Wikipedia page on the Sovereign Citizens Movement. The FBI classifies some sovereign citizen, this is skipping down, sovereign citizen extremists as domestic terrorists. In 2010, the Southern Poverty Law Center, or SPLC, estimated that approximately 100,000 Americans were, quote, hardcore sovereign believers, unquote, with another 200,000 just starting out by testing sovereign techniques for resisting everything from speeding tickets to drug charges. In surveys conducted in 2014 and 2015, representatives of U.S. law enforcement ranked the risk of terrorism from the sovereign citizen movement higher than the risk from Islamic extremism. So was Stephen Paddock acting out part of his sovereign citizen's political ideology? We don't know. He took his own life. I would note that in the Turner Diaries, a book that was published by National Vanguard Books and authored by William Luther Pierce, the head of the National Alliance, one of America's most prominent Nazi/white supremacist groups, and whose ideological tracks were the legal interference for some of their ideological tracks was run by none other than Glenn Greenwald, as I talked about in For the Record 888. In the Turner Diaries, activists on behalf of the Order, the Nazi group that takes over America in that tract, are supposed to take their own lives rather than be captured alive and interrogated. So it is possible that when Stephen Paddock did take his own life, he was not simply snapping or becoming depressed or regretful about what he had done, but was acting in accordance with the precepts of the Turner Diaries. There was another mass school shooting, this one in Santa Fe, Texas, allegedly perpetrated, he has not been convicted yet, by a guy named Demetrius, D-I-M-I-T-R-I-O-S, Pagurtzis, P-A-G-O-U-R-T-Z-I-S. And it appears that he, too, was influenced by far-right slash Nazi ideology and had a lot of that communicated to him by various online forums. This is a manifestation of, quote, extreme culture, unquote, which mixes in hardcore white supremacist and Nazi ideology with general shock value, violence, porn, and extremely harsh music and imagery. From the Daily Beast of May 18th of 2018, Demetrius Pagurtzis, Texas shooting suspect, posted neo-Nazi imagery online. This by Kathy Weil, W-E-I-L-L. Demetrius Pagurtzis, the suspected gunman who opened fire at a Texas high school on Friday morning, apparently posted photos of neo-Nazi iconography online, according to social media accounts flagged by classmates and reviewed by the Daily Beast. On April 30th, Pagurtzis apparently posted a T-shirt with "Born to Kill," unquote, printed on the front, boasting that it was custom-made. That same day, Pagurtzis posted multiple pictures of a duster jacket emblazoned with a variety of symbols, including the Iron Cross, a German military award last given by the Nazis, and other pins. He said he equated the Iron Cross with bravery, unquote. Pagurtzis said a hammer and sickle meant rebellion, unquote, a rising sun meant kamikaze tactics, unquote, and a Baphomet meant evil. That is a satanic symbol. Again, before continuing, all of this suggests that he had become infatuated with, again, extreme culture, which incorporates and overlaps Nazi and white supremacist ideology, but also uses concepts and iconography and even sounds from other elements of, again, extreme culture. skipping down in this article, one of his classmates notes, quote, "The sketchy thing is he wore a full-on black trench coat to school every day," unquote, Thurman said, adding she hadn't had a class with him since the eighth grade. Montemayor, another of his classmates, said that in retrospect, Pagutsis' trench coat was odd. Quote, "Why would you wear a trench coat when it's 100 degrees outside? When he first started wearing that trench coat, it was during the winter," unquote. But in the hotter months, Pagutsis didn't take it off. Pagutsis began wearing the coat at the beginning of the year. "It's like 90 degrees outside, and this guy is still wearing a trench coat," Thurman said. "It should have been noted that's a red flag right there," unquote. Other images on Pagutsis' now deleted Facebook page suggest a possible interest in white supremacist groups. Pagutsis uploaded a number of T-shirts that feature vaporwave-style designs. Vaporwave, capital V-A-P-O-R-W-A-V-E, a music and design movement, has spawned a related movement called Fashwave, F-A-S-H-W-A-V-E, which borrows the same aesthetic but applies them to neo-Nazi subjects. Pagutsis' Facebook header image was the cover of an album by musician Perturbator, P-E-R-T-U-B-A-T-O-R. Perturbator's music has been co-opted by members of the Fashwave movement, BuzzFeed previously reported. Neo-Nazi website The Daily Stormer frequently includes Perturbator's music in Fashwave Fridays posts. And before getting to the trench coat that he was wearing, I would note that in initial reports about the Santa Fe shooting, Pagutsis may very well have had some collaborators. Yes, that's right. He may have been part of an organized conspiracy, although the mention of that quickly disappeared. I don't know exactly what became of that. From the New York Times of May 19th of 2018, on page 812 of the Western edition, "Looking for motives in a shooting suspect whose past is a pretty clean slate," unquote, by Julie Turkowitz, T-U-R-K-E-W-I-T-Z, and Jess Bidgood, B-I-D-G-O-O-D. I would say, taking a look at some of the things that he was into, the fast wave and other elements, I think motives are not all that difficult to discern. But what I want to point out is this, skipping down. On Friday, authorities intended to question two other people. One was at the scene and had, quote, "suspicious reactions," unquote, according to the governor, and another had drawn the scrutiny of investigators. By Friday afternoon, the suspect was in custody at the Galveston jail, where he is being held for capital murder. Federal authorities are seeking search warrants to find explosive devices at two residences. Police said the gunman brought several of these devices into the school. It was unclear whether any went off. So again, we are initially told that there were search warrants for two residences and two other people, one of whom was at the scene and had, quote, "suspicious reactions," unquote, and another had drawn the scrutiny of investigators. We don't know what happened. Were there other people involved? If so, why aren't we hearing more about that? Had Pagutsis actually fallen in with some sort of fascist or ultra-right-wing group? We don't know, but I don't think that possibility can be altogether overlooked in light of the initial reports. Again, it says that federal authorities were seeking search warrants to find explosive devices at two residences. And police said the gunman brought several of those into the school. What about these other people? One was at the scene and had suspicious reactions, unquote, according to the governor, and another had drawn the scrutiny of investigators. Again, we don't know, but the possibility that Pagutsis may have been part of some right-wing group is, I think, something that needs to be seriously considered. In articles that appeared in the Media One in the good old New York Times, The fact that Pegoulis was wearing a trench coat was linked with Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, the two shootings at Columbine High School and Bluffton, the two shooters at Columbine High School in Bluffton, Colorado. I did a For the Record show about that, For the Record 115, dealing with the Columbine School massacre. That is linked in the description for this show, which again will be present, available presently. It maintains that Pegoulis was a copycat killer. That is why he was wearing the trench coat. I think it is altogether possible that Pegoulis was wearing the trench coat because he was influenced by Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold. I would point out that Pegoulis, however, was 17 years old, which means that he wouldn't have been born when the Columbine massacre occurred. I think that was in 1999, maybe 98. In any event, it was certainly before Demetrius Pegoulis was born. So if he learned about it, and if that was the inspiration for him wearing that trench coat, Harris and Klebold were part of a group of students who spoke German to each other and called themselves the Trench Coat Mafia. I certainly think it's altogether possible that that was the inspiration for Pegoulis. Remember, there are 173 different online outlets that glorify school shooters, and that many of these overlap the, quote, alt-right, unquote. But the New York Times predictably did not mention about Harris and Klebold, although it did talk about the trench coat mafia, unquote, was that Harris and Klebold were deeply influenced by Nazi and fascist ideology. One of the articles that we went into in the archive show about the Columbine school shooting, this from the Washington Post of April 22nd of 1999. This is by Paul Dugan, D-U-G-G-A-N, Michael D. Shear, S-H-E-A-R, and Mark Fisher, M-A-R-C, capital F-I-S-H-E-R, shooting pair mixed fantasy and reality. They hated jocks, admired Nazis, and scorned normalcy. They fancied themselves devotees of the Gothic subculture, even though they thrilled to the violence denounced by much of that fantasy world. They were white supremacists, but loved music by anti-racist rock bands. Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold were bright young men who became social outcasts in their suburban Denver high school and then built their own internal society by plucking strands from the pop whirlwind of cyberspace and fantasy games, the soundtrack of American youth, and a netherworld that glamorizes Nazi symbols and terrorist violence. I'm skipping down. An initial sketch of Harris and Klebold and the trench coat mafia to which they claim membership emerged yesterday from interviews with friends, fellow students, and neighbors, and from police and school officials. Skipping down again. 19 days before they were to graduate, Harris and Klebold seemed inseparable and troublesome. In Columbine's hallways, they spoke German and often referred to 420, Hitler's birthday, and the day that they chose for their assault. Some Columbine students said the violent side of Harris and Klebold became more obvious in recent months. They became obsessively interested in World War II, Nazi imagery, and Adolf Hitler. John House, 17, a Columbine senior, told reporters that when he went bowling with Klebold, quote, when he would do something good, he would shout, Heil Hitler, and throw up his hand. It just made everyone mad, unquote. The point being that Harris and Klebold, rather like Demetrius Pegoulis, appear to have been influenced by, quote, extreme culture, unquote, and propelled in a not a violent direction, and a direction that was governed to an extent by their fascination with and preoccupation with Nazism and fascism. I think the incorporation of elements of Nazi ideology and certainly imagery into extreme culture is dangerously irresponsible. I have no hope, however, that the misbegotten traffickers in extreme culture will ever acknowledge their responsibility for things like this or change their ways. I've encountered that type of culture, and that culture and the people who propagate it, I think, are beyond the pale and cannot be expected to behave in a responsible fashion.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
And For the Record, 995, we went into the Atomwaffen Nazi group. They were planning nuclear terrorism, the takedown of a nuclear power plant, among other things. By way of examining how online culture can influence people who are young and or alienated and or not wrapped too tight to begin with, we're going to take a look at an aspect of the Atomwaffen crew that dovetails with something we have spoken about in connection with the return of the OUNB Nazi successor organizations to power in Ukraine. We've spoken about the Nazi Azov Battalion, whose combat helmets feature the swastika and the SS rune, and who have a political offshoot that has been involved with executing police responsibilities in many Ukrainian cities. A member of the Atomwaffen, a fellow named Andrew Onishuk, O-M-E-S-C-H-U-K, had been influenced by online/extreme culture that appears to have driven him in the political direction that ultimately resulted in his affiliation with the Atomwaffen, and it had driven him to, it moved him to try to enlist, travel overseas to Ukraine to enlist in the Azov Battalion. From Rolling Stone magazine of May 2nd of 2018, All American Nazis by Janet Reitman, R-E-I-T-M-A-N, about Andrew Onishuk, again, O-N-E-S-C-H-U-K, a member of the Atomwaffen Nazi group. Increasingly, Andrew obsessed over issues like climate change and the Syrian refugee crisis. He'd also embraced an apocalyptic and conspiratorial worldview in which Western civilization was doomed and he, a white male, was a victim. Note this, because we're going to take a look at elements of the alt-right, again, I hate the term, but it has passed into popular usage, that overlap with a doctrinaire, misogynistic, and woman-hating online ideological milieu, some of whose members call themselves incels, I-N-C-E-L-S, standing for involuntary celibates. And I think the dynamic with the hashtag MeToo movement, about which we will have more to say later, and the incels, misogynistic ideology, offers some truly hellacious possibilities. And I think an awful lot of people are going to be propelled into one aspect or another of irresponsible and extreme action, whether it is actual violence against women by some of the incels, or whether it is a shallow political vigilantism which can be manipulated by the far right in connection with elements of the hashtag MeToo movement, something we have spoken about before and something we will take up again later. I think with the hashtag MeToo movement on one side and the incels' organized misogynistic movement overlapping the alt-right on the other, we are poised for some truly horrific and very tragic things indeed in this society. Again, from the Rolling Stone of May 2nd of 2018, All American Nazis by Janet Reitman, of Andrew Onishuk and his propelling into his propulsion in the direction of the atom weapon. Increasingly, Andrew obsessed over issues like climate change and the Syrian refugee crisis. He also embraced an apocalyptic and conspiratorial worldview in which Western civilization was doomed and he, a white male, was a victim. He was amazed at his parents' complacency. Didn't they realize blacks were responsible for 80% of the crime in America, he falsely claimed, using statistics that seemed drawn from nowhere. America's S blank blank blank, he said, my generation is failing, unquote. Skipping down. Andrew, who was 1/8 Ukrainian, took to the cause, chatting with fighters and their allies. He began formulating a plan to join the Azov Battalion, a notoriously brutal band of international fighters helping in the resistance against the Russians. In January 2015, Andrew bought a fake passport and a one-way ticket to Kiev. The day before he was set to leave, having packed his camping gear and arranged for a limousine to Logan Airport in Boston, he casually told his mother on the way home from school, I think I'm going to go to Ukraine, unquote. His sister Emily had been concerned when Andrew went through his German army phase, though some of her friends told her that they also thought the SS was cool when they were younger. I don't think they understood they were actually bad guys, says Emily. It's more like the bad guys in Indiana Jones with the cool car, unquote. But Andrew took it further, eventually adopting the online handle Borovikov, B-O-R-O-V-I-K-O-V, after a famous Russian neo-Nazi gang leader. That spring, he hung an SS flag in his bedroom, as well as a giant swastika. So again, note that in addition to his exposure to toxic online political culture, some of which appears to have been, again, the extreme culture that I have spoken about, in addition to propelling him in the direction of the Adam Waffen group, Andrew Onishuk of the Adam Waffen was thinking about joining the Azov Battalion. Also note that people who are young, depressed, relatively unsophisticated politically, certainly Americans have very little historical awareness, they can be influenced by that type of culture in the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk, also like the Turner Diaries put out by National Vanguard Books. The marketing of the Third Reich as something that was kind of cool is openly discussed. Perhaps we'll take this up at a future time. Do note, however, that the irresponsible use of the internet can mobilize an awful lot of people into some very extreme points of view, some of which will result in some very violent behavior. Note Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris and Nicholas Cruz and Demetrius Pagoutsis and others. Again, an awful lot of these school shootings and an awful lot of these mass shootings appear to have been done by people who were influenced by one type of far-right ideology or another, and yet we are being told that it is guns that are doing this. Pagoutsis, by the way, did not use an assault rifle, nor did he use any sort of subterfuge to obtain his weapons. He took his father's shotgun and revolver and committed some mayhem with those. I noted in past discussions of school shooting that you can wreak an awful lot of havoc with a shotgun, but gun laws would not have done anything to limit Demetrius Pagoutsis. Again, he used his father's shotgun and pistol. So that is really not the variable to be looking at in that regard. Again, 173 different online venues tout, actively support, and celebrate school shooters. One has to wonder whether the sporting of a trench coat by Demetrius Pagoutsis, who had not been born when Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold performed their massacre on Hitler's birthday, one has to wonder whether he had been visiting some of those online school shooting celebratory sites. Something else, and I'll note that in the article that we just excerpted, the Rolling Stone article, Andrew Armashuk said that Western civilization was doomed and that he, a white male, was a victim. Overlapping Nazi slash fascist slash alt-right slash white supremacist ideology is a truly toxic, misogynistic movement, again, fed online, and as I've noted, in connection with people's feelings about sexuality, a great many people, I suspect most people, have been harmed in one way or another, hopefully just temporarily and not too seriously, but an awful lot of people have been sexually or romantically wounded. Many people have been seriously scarred psychologically by their sexual slash romantic encounters, or by molestation by a parent of the opposite sex, or a parent of the same sex, or an employer, or whatever. People's feelings about sexuality are among their deepest, most conflicted, most painful, and in many cases, unconscious or preconscious feelings. So when they begin, when those damaged feelings about sexuality and or romance begin to manifest in people's minds, and when they get on online forums that are encouraging people who are, in this case, men, who are nursing damaged sexual slash romantic feelings, you are talking about a truly explosive possibility.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
An article in the New York Times, an op-ed column, I should say, from May 11th of 2018 by Amanda Taub, T-A-U-B. Incels, again, that's it's a contraction for involuntary celibates. Incels aren't alone in online harvesting of men's sense of loss. And skipping down, the alt-right, right-wing populism, men's rights groups, and a renewed white supremacist movement have capitalized on many white men's feeling of loss in recent years. The groups vary in how they diagnose society's ills and whom they blame, but they provide a sense of meaning and place for their followers. And as different extremist groups connect online, they draw on one another's membership bases, tactics, and worldviews, allowing membership in one group to become a gateway to other extremist ideologies as well. Today, for example, posts on incel.me, an incel forum, debate joining forces with the alt-right and argue that Jews are to blame for incels' oppression. On one thread, users fantasize that if they were dictators, they would not only create harems and enslave women, but also, quote, gas the Jews, unquote, by dividing the world into us versus them and describing vast injustice at the hands of the supposedly powerful. These groups, experts say, can prime adherents for violence. And another New York Times article, this by Jessica Valenti, this is an op-ed column, when misogynists become terrorists. This from the New York Times of April 26th of 2018. And it talks about some mass killers, some of them shooters, some of them, like a fellow who drove into a crowd up in Toronto, were incels or people nurturing some kind of deep psychosexual grievance that manifested as lethal violence. And talking about how some of these people can, in fact, become actively violent, Jessica Valenti notes as follows, skipping down. In 2014, a gaming awards ceremony set to honor the feminist critic Anita Sarkeesian, S-A-R-K-E-E-S-I-A-N, received a bomb threat. An anonymous harasser threatened to detonate the device unless her award was rescinded. Before Milo Yiannopoulos was a well-known alt-right figure, feminists knew him as one of the primary architects of Gamergate, a movement of young men who harassed and threatened women in the video gaming industry. Two fans of Mr. Yiannopoulos were charged with shooting a protester outside one of his speeches. So again, note the explosive brew of online culture, deeply wounded psychosexual feelings manifesting as, you know, the incel movement, and resulting in an explicit and in many cases violently misogynistic ideology. Note that mixing with the online extreme culture. Milo Yiannopoulos, of course, part of the alt-right milieu that backed Donald Trump. But we're going to see some more of this recombinant political DNA in which Nazi and fascist views are fusing with the incel misogynistic online community. From the Southern Poverty Law Center intelligence report of March 1st of 2012, Leaders' Suicide Brings Attention to Men's Rights Movement by Arthur Goldwag, G-O-L-D-W-A-G. It talks about a men's movement which is basically a resentful, because there are, you know, men's movements or consciousness-raising sessions. I think many of them are, frankly, kind of pathetic or silly. This is a different thing. This is a virulently anti-female, misogynistic, quote, men's movement, and again, fed by online activity. And the discussion here is the suicide by fire of Thomas James Ball, who was a leader of the Massachusetts-based Fatherhood Coalition, but skipping down. This kind of woman hatred is increasingly visible in most Western societies, and it tends to be aligned with other anti-modern emotions. Opposition to same-sex marriage, to non-Christian immigration, to women in the workplace, and even, in some cases, to the advancement of African Americans. Just a few weeks after Ball's death, while scorch marks were still visible on the sidewalk in Keene, New Hampshire, that was made clear once more by a Norwegian named Anders Behring Breivik. Behring is B-E-H-R-I-N-G. On July 22nd, Breivik slaughtered 77 of his countrymen, most of them teenagers, in Oslo and at a summer camp on the island of Utøya, U-T-O-Y-A, because he thought they or their parents were the kinds of, quote, politically correct, unquote, liberals who were enabling Muslim immigration. But Breivik was almost as voluble on the subjects of feminism, the family, and fathers' rights as he was on Islam. Quote, the most direct threat to the family is divorce on demand, unquote, he wrote in the manifesto he posted just before he began his deadly spree. Quote, the system must be reformed so that the father will be awarded custody rights by default, unquote. The manosphere lit up, said one approving poster at the Spearhead, an online men's rights magazine for the, quote, defense of ourselves, our families, and our fellow men, unquote. What could be more eye for an eye, unquote, than to kill the children of those who were so willing to destroy men's families and destroy the homeland of men? Anders Breivik, basically a Nazi, alleged lone gunman who killed 77 people, as noted here. A number of people whose opinions I respect are suspicious of the Breivik situation, in certain respects not unlike Demetrius Pagoutsis, who may have been part of a group, although very quickly the news reports of that disappeared. A number of people suspect that for Breivik to have done what he did, he killed some people, then took a boat over to an island and killed a bunch more people. They suspect there must have been complicity with the security forces, police, or whatever, in Norway. And they doubt that Breivik could have done what he did if he were truly a, quote, lone nut, unquote. Although there may be no connection whatsoever, I would note that the Secretary General of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg was the Prime Minister of Norway when this happened. Whether or not that analysis expressed by people whose opinions I respect of Breivik basically having taken the fall for a larger fascist group, I think it's interesting that Jens Stoltenberg, again, the Prime Minister of Norway when this happened, had an interesting op-ed column co-authored with Angelina Jolie in The Guardian, in which Jolie and Stoltenberg advocated NATO taking the lead in defending the rights of women, and cited Kosovo as an example of their success. That is interesting in light of the fact that Hashim Thaçi, the head of Kosovo, not only utilized descendants of many fascist organizations to come to power, including the 21st Waffen-SS Division or Skanderbeg Division. He also kept a harem of sexual slaves. I've done several shows about the hashtag MeToo movement, and when I talk about weaponized feminism, I am not talking about feminism, but rather the weaponization of feminism as a vehicle for the political destruction of various people. I noted that although Harvey Weinstein does appear to have engaged in some truly reprehensible practices, he was a key Democratic donor, and his takedown has opened up a number of possibilities, including once again tarring the Democrats with the onus of sexual harassment, etc. I would note that the fellow who broke the story in the New Yorker magazine about Harvey Weinstein was Ronan Arwenian Farrow. He is the son of Mia Farrow. The New Yorker of October 23rd of 2017, from aggressive overtures to sexual aggression. Harvey Weinstein's accusers tell their story, again by Ronan Farrow. His biography is interesting. From the Washington Post of February 24th of 2014, Ronan Farrow, from State Department to Twitter legend to MSNBC host at Timeline, we note, quote, post-law school, lands a job at the State Department as a special advisor focusing on conflict in Afghanistan and Pakistan. That suggests a very strongly involvement of Ronan Farrow with the intel community. That's not incel, but intelligence community, either as a CIA State Department insert or as perhaps State Department intelligence. 2011 starts working alongside Hillary Clinton, with a title Special Advisor to the Secretary of State and Director of the State Department's Global Youth Issues Office. Was he, in fact, doing opposition research and getting ready to float the Harvey Weinstein story in order to help discredit the Democrats and Barack Obama, whose daughter had interned with Harvey Weinstein? That is, as I like to say, food for thought and grounds for further research. Ronan Farrow also co-authored with Jane Mayer an article from the New Yorker of May 7th of 2018, Four Women Accuse New York's Attorney General of Physical Abuse. Whether or not Eric Schneiderman did in fact engage in physical abuse, whether he was into bondage and discipline or a real sicko, or whether, as he claims, he was just doing role-playing, there are a lot of weird things that go on behind closed doors. One of the things that makes the whole hashtag MeToo beautiful from an intelligence standpoint is that there are very seldom any witnesses to these things. But note that from Politico magazine of February 3rd of 2017 by David Friedlander, Friedlander, will this man take down Donald Trump? Schneiderman took up the state's existing case against Trump University. New York wanted the school to drop the university from its name. It also notes that Schneiderman had been very active against other elements as well. Well, he is no longer going to be doing anything to Trump, because whether or not he did what he is accused of doing, and he may have, he is now out, courtesy of the hashtag MeToo movement. And again, I find Ronan Farrow's State Department background with Afghanistan, specializing in activities in Afghanistan and Pakistan, translation, counterterrorism. I find that very interesting indeed. I would also note from the Albany Times Union of April 24th of 2018, Faces of NXIVM, an alleged cult's inner circle and beyond by Joyce Bassett. Eric Schneiderman had been investigating the NXIVM cult, and among the high-profile people involved with it, Republican campaign strategist and self-described political dirty trickster Roger Stone had taken NXIVM's executive success courses or were found to have ties to the organization. Roger Stone have had anything to do with the takedown of Eric Schneiderman. Certainly he signaled the takedown of Al Franken. Again, we'll explore this at greater length, perhaps in a future program. Time, however, has marched on. This concludes For the Record program 1011, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates, being recorded on June 19th of the year 2018. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.